I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Divine Lorraine Hotel on North Broad Street in Philadelphia became a symbol of urban decay. The once glorious building has been vacant for years and scarred by graffiti, broken windows, and rubble. Eric Blumenfeld saw beauty and big possibilities in the 120-year-old structure and bought it at auction earlier this fall. He plans to convert it into apartments with retail restaurants on the ground floor. He's working to revitalize North Broad from City Hall to Temple University, and the Divine Lorraine is a centerpiece of that vision. And Eric Blumenfeld is a developer, the CEO of EB Realty Management Corporation, and he joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Eric, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here. Penelope Giles has been working for a number of years to revitalize this community. She's the founder and director of the Francisville Neighborhood Development Corporation, has been living in this neighborhood her entire life, more than 50 years. And Penelope Giles, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. Philadelphia is home to a number of historic and important buildings worth saving, so we invited John Andrew Gallery, the executive director of the Preservation Alliance of Greater Philadelphia, to join us. And John, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Eric, let me begin with you, because you actually bought the Divine Lorraine in 2003. You sold it in 2006. What brought you back to this building?
Well, I guess about 10 years ago, I started looking around on North Broad Street, and I could never understand why there wasn't more traction. There seemed to be a plethora of interesting old factory buildings that had long been vacated, and it seemed like a natural to me. And the Divine Lorraine was actually the first building that I bought on the corridor, and then subsequently I was able to buy the Nippon building, which we converted to Loft 640 down the street.
But something brought you back to the Divine Lorraine.
Well, I was always haunted by the sale of the Divine Lorraine. I really wanted to develop it, and back then I had a different plan because the building had on a typical floor 26 300 square foot hotel rooms, and they were really very, very interesting. And I thought if I combined two hotel rooms into one historic loft apartment, that it would be a very cool community. And when the opportunity came up to develop the 640 building, my bankers basically cornered me and said, pick one or the other. And so over the last decade, I've kind of been haunted by the condition of the Divine Lorraine, and I feel like I'm blessed to have this second opportunity, and hopefully a lot more seasoned. The project is obviously different because the building has suffered from considerable blight. But we have a terrific plan, and you know, it involves. I've had the honor of working with John and Penelope. Penelope more recently in the neighborhood, and look, there's a lot of pioneers in this neighborhood.
Absolutely.
So it's easy to be me when I have people like Penelope and Barbara Kelly and Spring Garden Civic and Pat Freeland behind me.
Well, let me get Penelope in on the conversation. As I said, you actually have grown up in this neighborhood and have seen or been part of this Divine Lorraine Hotel.
Yeah. The hotel itself it sits at the gateway of our neighborhood. So, it was something that I grew up seeing. You know, of course, when you're young, you don't realize, no. You know, what the value, you know, is of buildings and things like that in your neighborhood. But once I got into this quest to revitalize our commercial corridor, the Divine Lorraine became an integral part of, you know, that happening. So we were very excited. I didn't know that Eric had owned it prior to the other folks from the Netherlands. but when, you know, there was news and there was buzz about it, you know, possibly being restored and put back into use, it was very, very important to us because it's at our gateway.
Indeed. And I want to get back to the both of you, but let me get John Andrew Gallery in on the conversation as the director of the Preservation Alliance of Greater Philadelphia. What's the significance of the Divine Lorraine?
The Divine Lorraine has, I think, two really principal significances. First of all, it has architectural significance. It was designed by Willis Hale, who was one of the great architects of the late 19th century. But even more than that, it is one of the earliest examples of what were called early skyscrapers in the 1890s, the first buildings that went above eight stories. And we're able to do so because of steel frame construction, which is what the Divine Lorraine is, and the use of elevators. From an architectural point of view, it's not only handsome, but it is significant in terms of this change in the method of construction that occurred in the 1890s. The second reason it's significant that has been alluded to is it's an important part of the social history of Philadelphia. It was originally a luxury apartment house. It was the equivalent of the Ritz residences at the Ritz-Carlton of its day.
Wow.
And then it became a hotel owned by Father Divine. And during that period, it was the first-class racially integrated hotel in the city of Philadelphia. So for both architectural reasons and for social reasons, it's a very important part of Philadelphia's history.
Well, Eric, going back to you and actually something we were talking about before the show began, you said when you first bought it and went inside the building, there were tables that were still set, beds that were made, as if perhaps it had been, in a sense, time had forgotten it, but it had been left alone.
Right. My original plan was actually to hypnotize Mark Vetri and Stephen Starr to open
restaurant
at the
tours.
Divine Lorraine. And I remember walking through with those guys, and we all were very numb with, there's an aura when you walk through the building. I feel like the walls kind of talk to you. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had bought the building from Tony Goldman, who I think was a great mentor for me and a pioneer in Philadelphia. Tony had this unbelievable airplane collection. So the whole hotel was kind of his storage for these antique airplanes. And so there were different experiences that you would have walking through the building. And then Tony warned me that there was a fellow who was part of the Divine movement. Father Divine had converted a lot of his folks to, they changed their last name to Peace, and it was the Peace Movement. So there was a gentleman who actually took care of the building by the name of David Peace.
Hmm.
And I'll never forget my first day of owning the building. I feel a finger on my shoulder, and I turn around and I said, "You must be David Peace." And David,
he just kind of appeared out of nowhere?
He just appeared, and really interesting guy. He knew every nook and cranny of the building. He would just appear and disappear. You got the feeling, I wasn't sure if he was real, but
Apparently he was, though.
He was real. He taught me a lot, and he gave me a sense of what the building could be and a sense of how people could really care about something so important. So, it's really true that, I've always felt a loss in selling that building, and the opportunity to create it now, especially when we have such great momentum on North Broad Street. I feel like, everybody thought I was crazy developing Loft 640 across the street, and then when I was able to hypnotize Vetri into opening Osteria, they thought he was crazy. And then when Mark won the James Beard Award for Osteria, people started looking around. Maybe these guys aren't so crazy.
Well, let me turn back to you, Penelope. As someone who's lived in this neighborhood, I mean, what is your vision for not just the Divine Lorraine, but how you see this building fitting in with what you've been doing?
Well, I think that Mr. Gallery mentioned that he hit on it, that it was the first interracial high-end hotel, or if you will. So what we've been doing in Francisville is we've been working to, you know, regain our population, increase the diversity ethnically, economically, so that we can begin to support all of these wonderful businesses that are coming in. And also, you know, we want to see Ridge Avenue eventually come back to his glory.
And that's the business part of the business street
in
this neighborhood.
So, I mean, but that's what it means to us. I mean, it means it's an opportunity. It's a catalyst for further growth, economic growth, which stabilizes a neighborhood. Those are the ingredients that you need to have a healthy neighborhood. So, you know, our organization's been working with developers, market rate developers. They're building the houses and the places where we're trying to attract people to come back to the city. This sort of development, these are the things that, you know, brings Philadelphia back to its prominence, to its, you know, to its original place, you know, in this country. So, this is wonderful. Wonderful.
Let me turn back to you, John Gallery, and looking at how a building can revitalize a neighborhood, picking up on both of our other guests have talked about. Have you seen that happen in Philadelphia?
I think there are lots of examples where particularly a building of this sort of size and prominence has been renovated. It has a big impact on the surrounding area. So I think the Divine Lorraine does have a potential to not only build on what Eric and others have started there, but also to be a catalyst. I mean, everyone has always thought the building was in a sort of a no man's land. It's too far from Center City. It's not close enough to Temple. So if something happened there in the middle, I think it would change the perception of what the market on North Broad Street is. And the other thing I do want to point out is that there are a tremendous number of other historic buildings on North Broad Street. This was a concentration of buildings associated with the automobile industry, like Wilkie Buick that Eric is involved with, but the Packard building, which was converted to housing. There are probably another 20 or 30 buildings associated with the automobile industry that have historic significance that could be part of a revitalization strategy that the Divine Lorraine could help to initiate.
And all part of that North Broad Street corridor.
We tried to get the North Broad Street National Register Historic District extended to include all these, but there are just too many other non-historic things in between. But there are lots of individual buildings that have great potential.
Well, I want to pick up on that. I know, Eric, you want to say something as well. We have to take a very short break. We are talking about the past and the future of the Divine Lorraine Hotel with John Andrew Gallery, Eric Blumenfeld, and Penelope Giles. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Are you a breast cancer survivor? Do you have hot flashes? The Integrative Medicine Program at Penn Medicine is studying ways to improve the quality of life of breast cancer survivors. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of acupuncture or medication to treat hot flashes. Initial evaluations determine eligibility. To learn more about Penn's Integrative Medicine Program, 215-349-5647. 215-349-5647.
We heard a lot this election season about things like tax cuts and health care, but what about issues like crime and poverty? We ask our Election Day roundtable why some of those topics didn't get top billing on the campaign trail. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Medford Lee's, a not-for-profit community serving those ages 55-plus and guided by Quaker principles, supports WHYY. This fall, there's an opportunity to explore, learn, and discover with Medford Lee's as they launch their new Pathways series. Pathways features public programming on topics covering art, politics, music, history, horticulture, and more. Full details about Medford Lee's public events, educational programming, and its campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, are online at medfordlees.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about the Divine Lorraine Hotel. It fell on hard times and was recently purchased by our guest developer Eric Blumenthal, and he has big plans for that building. He joins us along with Penelope Giles, founder and executive director of the Francisville Neighborhood Development Corporation, and she has lived in this neighborhood for more than 50 years. John Andrew Gallery, executive director of the Preservation Alliance of Greater Philadelphia, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Eric, I've seen photographs of the inside of the Divine Lorraine today, and I have to say it's shocking to some degree in that you see all this rubble and broken glass and weird graffiti that's inside there, but you can see bits and pieces of what was its glory. What do you see when you're on the inside of, or in the inside of Divine Lorraine?
Well, I have some people think a mental problem because I feel like the walls talk to me. But, you know, I see a lot of history there. And although the building has been considerably stripped, the interiors actually have all exposed brick and
wow,
very interesting ceiling profiles. The most interesting window profiles I've ever seen. And so we've been playing around with how we would create loft apartments, and I think it's really an interesting space to play with. I mean, if there's an art to development, Divine Lorraine has got to be the greatest canvas to work with.
I'm curious about the windows. When you describe the windows, what's unique about them?
Well, a lot of times when you look at modern architecture, you see very hard, straight surfaces. And this era, I think, was famous for bay windows and balconies and, you know, just wall movement that you don't typically see in other structures, especially, you know, the other projects that we've done on the corridor were typically factory buildings.
With sort of straight walls.
Straight walls, right. and they're deep loft apartments. Here, the ratio of window to living space is actually really amazing. So I imagine that the dwelling spaces will be really, really very have a lot of light and air and really interesting spaces.
John, do you want to add to that just in terms of our understanding of this building?
Well, one of the interesting things, it does have all these bay windows, and normally you think of the bay windows as something that would have been in the hotel room or something, but in fact it's where the bathrooms were. So there are those little bays that sort of project out, which I think were shared bathrooms between two of the hotel suites. So it gives both the exterior of the building an animated character that a lot of other buildings don't have. But as Eric says, when you're inside, it has a very varied appearance, physical appearance, in the exterior wall of the building, which is quite interesting.
When you talk about a luxury apartment building, are we talking about apartments for just the well-to-do, or are you interested in apartments of people of mixed economics? Does that work in a building like that?
I think you said loft apartments.
Loft apartments,
I mean,
okay.
Maybe putting a word in his mouth.
I might, and excuse me if I did, but go ahead.
Actually, historic loft apartments.
There you go.
our vision is that this would be kind of the melting pot for a lot of different folks, and part of the way that we capitalize a project like this, intrinsically we have affordable rate apartments and moderate rate apartments. So we really envision a very mixed community there, And I think it's, you know, it's such an important project. I mean, you know, when I think about 10 years ago, the distance from City Hall to Temple University and how that gap has really closed. And one of the great people that I've had the opportunity to work with in Philadelphia is Alan Greenberger, our planning commissioner.
Sure.
And Alan used to host meetings when he first got into his position there, and forced the group to imagine what North Broad Street could be. And he kind of challenged us to imagine a master plan of how we would connect the dots. And, you know, everybody thought he was crazy. And I think what he did was he sparked a lot of creativity. And he brought a lot of people together. So we continue to kind of see North Broad as connecting dots and closing that gap. I really feel like this project, more so than any other, will really make us feel that North Broad Street is connected.
Well, even turning back to you, Penelope, you've been doing this kind of work for many years now. What has kept mm-hmm. you going? I know you live here and you grew up here, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that's part of it. But mm-hmm. There have to have been some frustrations along the way.
Absolutely. Craziness.
Craziness.
Kept me going. but it's, you know, it's seeing and understanding the potential of your neighborhood. I grew up in a middle to upper middle class African-American neighborhood. The corridor was full of stores. You could, you know, there wasn't anything you couldn't buy on Ridge Avenue. And, you know, in addition to that, I mean, there were before I was born, Ridge Avenue and the Divine Lorraine, this area was a mecca for music and for jazz, which is, you know, an American art form. And the Divine Lorraine played a huge role in that era, because the Blue Note, the original Blue Note nightclub, was at 15th and Ridge, just down the street from the Divine Lorraine.
Right.
So, you know, all of the greats played there. They stayed at the Divine Lorraine. There's just this enormous amount of history that you just don't know. Eric, you know,
he's learning.
I'm listening to him, and he sounds so much like an artist, a musician. The phrasing that he's using to describe the walls and the, you know, and it's the same way that I feel about the neighborhood. You know, there's so much diversity in terms of architecture, and people, and wanting to build on that is what right. is what's kept me going. It's, you know, the vision of that
and it's
becoming a reality.
I was just saying, yes. It sounds like it's starting to take shape.
Oh, God, I'm so excited.
Eric, let me go back to you, because I know there's land that you own near the Divine Lorraine, and you have plans. I think there's about 4 acres there. You have big plans to actually build or move some schools there: Masterman, Benjamin Franklin Parkway, and the Franklin Learning Center. The idea that of creating what an education hub on these 4 acres?
Yeah, it is it's a big idea, and I guess the roots of that idea sprouted 6 or 7 years ago when I looked around, and you know, we're surrounded by Ben Franklin High School and Franklin Learning Center and Masterman School and the Parkway School, and all of these great schools have different curriculums and different physical plant challenges. And, you know, with everything that's going on in our world with public education and our neighborhoods and our need to kind of close this gap of polarization, I feel like our world has gotten so kind of uncivilized. And we have an opportunity to kind of work together as a community and imagine a better model. And a lot of the core of what we do is based on converting historic buildings and taking advantage of federal tax credit programs that capitalize these projects. And it seems that there's perhaps an opportunity to build new schools, and that, you know, perhaps the model for public education over the last century has changed. For instance, in today's Inquirer, they talk about a grant that the school district is applying for that imagines that kids can use iPads. And so I've got to think that, you know, 100 years ago, an architect is designing a school. The heart and soul of the school is a library. And today, a library almost becomes like a museum because of...
Well, everything's a library now.
Mm. Right, mm. Yeah. So your library is portable.
Let me just reintroduce the three of you. That's Eric Blumenfeld. He's developer, CEO of EB Realty Management Corporation, recently purchased the Divine Lorraine. Also with us, John Andrew Gallery, Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Greater Philadelphia. And Penelope Giles rounds out our trio of guests. She's founder, Executive Director of the Francisville Neighborhood Development Corporation. And we have just one or two open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Penelope, let me go back to you. Do you like this idea of a kind of a campus of schools?
I think it's brilliant. I mean, the biggest challenge to luring people back to the city, you know, when you talk to folks who are in the suburbs or they've moved to the Northeast or whatever, you know, where am I going to send my kids to school? Mm-hmm. You know, the schools have suffered so much because of loss of population and all of that sort of thing. And I just think, you know, there'll be challenges. Mm-hmm. But, like you said, it's, you know, it's about building a better model. And I can't think of anything, you know, more that would complete that piece in terms of being able to attract people into the city.
You also, Erica, bought the Metropolitan Opera Company. Is that correct? Bought? Or you're co-owner now?
Yeah, I have joint ventured with Reverend Hatcher, and we've been on a mission to kind of imagine a sustainable and viable use for the Metropolitan Opera House. And like the Divine Lorraine, you know, it's just another one of these incredibly interesting buildings that, you know, and I feel that people drive by this building. There's so much traffic on Broad Street, and it's almost not visible. It like disappears.
Even though it's huge.
When you stand in front of this building and you imagine it coming back to life, it has such a potential of presence. And it's another one of those where, you know, as we start to connect these dots and create sustainable uses for these buildings, you know, there was a book written by an Inquirer writer, Bruce Bushell, called Walking Broad. And this was about 10 years ago when I was just starting out. And you walked away with a feeling of sadness. You know, he started way beyond Temple's campus. And, you know, it was really a story about blight. And I think our story today, Penelope and John, and Marty, is about hope and change and transformation.
Yeah,
and so, you know, we're in such a great place that, you know, because the world has become the way it is, I think we as a community work so hard to create change. And a couple of weeks ago, Penelope and I put together a neighborhood cleanup day.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Starr was kind enough to you know, prepare food for everybody, and the mayor came, and Councilman Greenlee and Councilman Clark, and it was just such a great, great day. Mm-hmm. It was a warm day.
Yes, before the storm.
Before the storm. John, let me have you just help us understand the Metropolitan Opera Company, why that's an important building among these many buildings along North Broad, and then I do want to get to some callers.
Well, the Met's a very unique building. As Eric says, when you look at it, you don't quite realize what it is. I mean, it's a 3,000-square-foot auditorium. It's one of the largest buildings built for concerts and performances in the city. It used to be the place where the Philadelphia Orchestra did its recordings because the acoustics were very good. But, you know, the other thing you have to keep in mind is it failed almost immediately. It was not a long-term opera company because people in Philadelphia would not traipse that far north on Broad Street. I mean, the Academy of Music was the place that often went to. And it's been vacant. It's certainly been vacant. You can tell I'm a little older than these folks. It's been vacant for as long as I've been in Philadelphia, except for the religious uses. So its restoration, I think, is extraordinarily challenging. I take my hat off to Eric for even thinking about taking it on. There's no doubt it could be a big impetus to development there, but having spent 10 years trying to rescue the Boyd Theater, I'd have to say that, you know, it's difficult to figure out how to use a 3,000-seat performance facility.
And is that how you see it, as a concert space?
Well, it's interesting, Marty. Stephen Starr taught me a long time ago to think in terms of efficiencies. And in Atlantic City, he built the Continental next to Budokan, and they actually secretly share a kitchen. So, you know, when I apply that lesson to the Met, it, you know, what we imagine is having multiple uses. So one is a concert hall, another is an event space. When this is brought back to life, it is one of the most glorious spaces. And, you know, Pastor Hatcher and I have become very, very close, and I really honor this man for saving this building, because there was a lot of political will at the time to actually tear it down. And what a crime it would have been to lose, you know, such an important landmark. But I think the answer is that if we, you know, we're working on a modern museum of art as a daytime use. We see it as an adjunct to our whole educational plan. You know, I imagine that Temple University, as they grow, this could be a great resource for Temple as well. So, you know, I think the sky is the limit on the brainstorm at this point. And, you know, our hope is over the next year that we'll actually be able to implement these ideas and bring it to fruition.
Is money a problem for you as a developer, finding money?
You know, money is always the challenge to any project. But I'm a headbanger, and I believe in the vision of North Broad Street. And so, you know, we've been able to put together the capital. And, you know, right now we have such great partnerships, and this corridor, I think people more so now, imagine my life 10 years ago. You know, I would have to turn over my next of kin. But today I think that there's a lot more people in the financial world that get it, and so we've proven the model. 640 is 640 incredibly successful, and Wilkie Buick has been incredibly successful. And, you know, Mark Vetri taking the first leap of faith was such an important step. Before that, you know, it was about proving that it was a viable community, that people wanted to live there. So every step has been critical.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. I do want to get some callers in as well. That's Eric Blumenfeld, developer, CEO of EB Realty Management Corporation, recently purchased the Divine Lorraine Hotel and the Metropolitan Opera Company. Also with us, Penelope Giles, founder, executive director of the Francisville Neighborhood Development Corporation, John Andrew Gallery of the Preservation Alliance.
Supporting WHYY, the Creffeld School, a small, progressive, independent college preparatory school for grades 7 through 12. Creffeld offers a learner-friendly curriculum, a visual and performing arts program which includes glass blowing, and an education which is hands-on and experiential. Creffeld strives to foster critically engaged citizens in a community of individuals. Located in Chestnut Hill, Creffeld is widely accessible via public transportation and school buses. Monthly open house dates and admission details at creffeld.org.
On the next Fresh Air, renowned neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about his new book, Hallucinations. We'll discuss how grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders can trigger hallucinations. We'll also talk about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 1960s. Join us.
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The 2012 election is on track to be the most expensive in history, $5.8 billion. With all that money spent, will it boil down to one county? Also, 2012 has been a year of gaffes. Remember when CNN reported the health care law had been struck down when it wasn't? What are news organizations doing to get election night right? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and we are talking about the past and the future of the Divine Lorraine Hotel on North Broad Street in Philadelphia and the surrounding neighborhood. John Andrew Gallery, Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Greater Philadelphia, developer Eric Blumenfeld, and Penelope Giles, Executive Director of the Francisville Neighborhood Development Corporation, our guests, and just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Let me Larry from Bucks County to join us. Larry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is a fascinating subject.
Thank you.
I've driven by the Divine Lorraine so many times, and it's a gorgeous building. And in the 60s, when I went to college in Philly, I always remember God is love, Father Divine. I don't remember the rest of that, but really was impressive. I wondered if your guests were thinking of doing an energy-efficient retrofit of the building. I know when they did the Empire State Building, they made a 38% improvement in the energy profile of the building. And this is an extraordinary opportunity.
Well, Larry, let me find out. Let me ask Eric Blumenfeld.
Larry, thanks for your question. And I'm assuming you were a Temple student in the 60s?
Sounds
Temple that way. And the University of the Arts.
There you go.
Oh, great.
Both ends.
Well, you know, the world is going in that direction, and we've been studying geothermal systems for the Divine Lorraine, and one of the advantages we have is the adjacent land to do the boring wells, and we basically see the Philadelphia Industrial Development Corp is, I call them our partners in a lot of these projects, and they've inspired a lot of new projects to think in terms of the future and energy works and things like that. So you're correct. It really is a perfect opportunity to kind of blend the future with the past.
And have you found that in some of the development in Francisville, which is that you have obviously older buildings, but also there is new technology for retrofits?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. That's just the nature of development these days, especially in our urban areas where there's so much, you know, left of the old fabric. But you want to try to make it efficient so we can decrease that carbon footprint.
Indeed.
And all of that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely opportunity and a challenge.
Indeed, on that as well. Let me get to Jamila from the Northeast to join us. Jamila, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good
Hi
morning.
Good morning.
I actually grew up in that area. Penelope is my mother.
Well, she was having some kind of a reaction, Jamila, so I figured there had to be some connection here. But go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Go ahead, Jamila.
Yeah, I'm listening to the plans, and I am so thrilled that they are going to redo the Father Divine. I have such wonderful memories as a little girl. My grandfather, they would have these big dinners and you know, different parts of the community in Francisville, different members would be there eating. And I just remember as a little girl sitting at these long tables, you know, and everybody dining together, you know. But I look at that building all the time, and I used to say, you know, somebody needs to do something with this building. And, and I'm just so glad to hear that somebody's doing something with that building. And I'm so thrilled to see different parts of Francisville being built back up again, because one of the reasons why I moved out of there and into the Northeast is because it was beginning to be run down. The crime rate went up, and I have four children, and I just wanted to it just wasn't the same neighborhood that I grew up in. And now when I come down there a little bit more and more and more, I see that the neighborhood is trying to come back, and I'm just thrilled about it.
Yeah, I'm going to get you back, too.
I think your mom's going to try to get you back there. Jamila, thanks so much for the call to Radio Times.
No problem.
Thanks a lot. And just picking up on what she said, Penelope, and sort of underscoring the kind of work that you're doing, and I know this part of Philly, like a lot of neighborhoods in Philly, has seen some hard times.
Yeah.
Loss of population.
And, you know, every neighborhood should have the same opportunity that we've had. One of the things that we did when we set about to do a neighborhood plan. We needed to know why our commercial corridor disappeared. Why did Broad Street look the way that it did? So we got an education. We understood that you need people in a neighborhood. You need people in the city. You need those tax dollars to make sure that the schools are good. So we had to embrace the idea of development. But before we could even do that, we had to polish up the diamond. You know, there were hundreds of vacant lots, you know, buildings, and there was just so much blight and so much trash and so much neglect that, I mean, that's all we've been doing, cleaning, greening, and, you know, creating a development-friendly environment that respects the residents and gives them an opportunity to be involved in this moving the neighborhood, North Broad Street, forward. I learned some things from my daughter. I didn't even remember that.
but there is always, I mean, and I don't know if gentrification is a bad word or a good word.
We don't use it like that. We there's any word can be negative. If it depends on the approach, and certainly, you know, gentrification has some negative connotations because of what it has done in the past. But I think that we have arrived at a history, a time in our history where we're realizing that we need to coexist. You know, economic segregation is the reason why there are so many, it breeds bad human behavior. And that's why we have these situations. But we can't exist as a nation. We can't exist as a city. We can't be as great as we can if we continue that model. And I think what I've heard from Eric is that he understands that.
I'd like to hear from John as well. But
I completely agree, Penelope. I mean, in my education, grown up in childhood, you know, the word gentrification offends people because I think that there are losers in that word.
Right.
And our world as we imagine it, there aren't losers. That, you know, we are fortunate in that we take vacant buildings and vacant lands and imagine uses for them and developing those properties. So there really shouldn't be any losers in this in this scenario. And so I caution people the word gentrification.
Yeah,
I think
we use regentrification.
Regentrification. John Gallery, I'm curious about your thoughts, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, there's no question that there's been investment in neighborhoods in Philadelphia in locations that 10 years ago we wouldn't have even imagined. However, looking at it from my point of view, from historic preservation, a lot of that has focused on building new infill housing on vacant lots. You could say there's a definite benefit to that, but you also have to remember that these neighborhoods, unlike Center City, are still losing population. Every time you build a new house, you vacate a historic existing house. So there's no net gain, you know, really, and there's no investment going on of an equal magnitude in existing housing. And it's not just vacant existing housing, it's existing occupied housing. Over the last 4 or 5 years, the Alliance has given about $1,700,000 in grants to people who are living in, low and moderate income people, living in historic houses. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that we could easily have spent three times that amount of money in terms of the need to reinvest in the existing housing stock in Philadelphia. Until that happens, these neighborhoods as a whole are not going to change. And the importance of that when you talk about gentrification is it's nice to say everyone wins, but everyone does not win. And it's the people who are living in those houses now who tend to be the ones that are displaced as the value of properties go up. So helping to retain that existing occupied housing stock is essential to retaining an economically mixed income neighborhood in the long run.
And I know both of you want to respond. Go ahead, Penelope, then you, Eric, and then I do want to get back to our callers.
I agree with John 100%. I mean, that was the biggest challenge, you know, and understanding that we had to embrace development meant that our property values were going to go up. You know, I live in a house that my father owned. My taxes were $63 a year for the first 8 or 9 years that I lived there after I renovated it. And, you know, it is a challenge for existing residents. So there has to be political will. This has to be a collaborative effort. Every neighborhood should have the opportunity to be economically diverse. So that means that our political leaders have to get together and figure out how that's going to be possible. And, I mean, through our property taxes and different programs that can be put in place to ensure that all economics can exist in one community. That has to be the goal for every neighborhood.
Go ahead, Eric, and then I do want to get to our callers, just briefly, if you don't mind.
Well, when I think about this conversation, I think about the need to create opportunities, to create jobs, and to inspire the kids in our community to reach for the sky and to give them the ammunition to do so, and that's based in education. And so, you know, I think we have a wonderful opportunity to kind of bring a lot of people into that conversation. Mark Vetri, several years ago, started a foundation that was really based on teaching the culinary arts to younger kids, but also to help to socialize and feed those kids in a healthy way. And, you know, Mark's impetus is based on bringing Italian dining to the American society, but it's also that he grew up around a dinner table and a lunch table where he was kind of taught at that table. And what he's learned at the Dream Camp at Girard College is, you know, that when the kids sit around the table and they break bread together and there's a captain who leads them, you know, all kinds of great things happen. So we have all these people that want to be involved in helping this conversation. And I think that that's all about to happen.
Yeah. I don't want to lose John's point, though, that there really must be some attention to the existing housing stock. Right. And it is a huge challenge.
Indeed it is. And perhaps we should do a whole show about that on another date. But let me get, looks like Rick D. from Cape May to join our conversation. Rick D., go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Eric for taking on such a monstrous task, but he'll live in infamy with that position he's taken and all the work he's going through. I do want to mention that North Broad Street is a very historical street in Philadelphia in the entertainment business. From the Divine Lorraine Hotel all the way to Girard Avenue were all the wholesalers of records. Mm-hmm. Any record store in a tri-state area had to go to North Broad Street to pick up their records. And, of course, all the artists in the 60s were there. They always stopped in. If they were in Philadelphia, they'd stop in and visit their distributor. Now, the distributor sells to the retailer, whether it be Sears and Roebuck at the time or individual record stores. So all these artists would be on North Broad Street. I mean, I've met Robert Goulet there, Mitch Miller, Paul and Paula, Johnny Mathis. And that is a very historical block.
And that's a really impressive list. Yeah, no, it's an impressive list that you have there. And I'm just looking at you, John Gallery. Anything you want to underscore with what Rick D. just said? You're talking about the automobile, you know, showrooms there. Now we've got another business.
Actually, I've never heard of that before, so it's quite interesting to know that information. But I go back to what Penelope said. I mean, there was a time earlier in the century when music, particularly the jazz world, was really very extensive in Philadelphia, with great many artists not only coming here, but people like John Coltrane living here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, you know, focused around North Philadelphia, North Broad Street, Cecil B. Moore Avenue, and those places.
Eric, does anyone know where all the fixtures, what was inside the Divine Lorraine, where that went?
Sold? Well, there was a salvage company which took a lot of things out, and a lot of things have been sold to individuals.
So scattered?
But a lot of it, I'd have to say, the developers who started on this project really did a very poor job in terms of trying to preserve things that would have helped the project. And Eric has unfortunately inherited a building that combination of salvage and demolition have removed many, many of the really fine historic features. And it's a shame because there are some rooms, the two big auditorium rooms on the top floor, there are places that were spectacular that have been lost. And certainly there's been a lot of vandalism that's occurred. There have been several small fires, you know, in the building. So a lot of the really wonderful interior architecture is gone.
Well, I'm going to give you 10 seconds there, Eric, because I have a feeling you are not deterred by what John just said. Very bravely.
It is what it is. I agree with some of the things John has said. There is a lot of history that still exists there, and that's what we're going to bring forth.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Eric Blumenfeld, Penelope Giles, and John Andrew Gallery. Appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. You can also go to whyy.org/Radio Times and find out much more about this program, including Twitter and our Facebook page. We took pictures of our guests, and they are on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, but do stay with us. We'll be right back.